I hope you're having a great Friday and that you're looking forward to a wonderful weekend that includes some time spent with the members of your home congregation. Everybody needs to be gathering together for worship and fellowship and prayer and praise and study and service with the home church. If you don't have a home church, you need to go out there and find one. Stay plugged in there. If you're looking right now for such a place, and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, we invite you to come and check us out as a potential place to call your home church. I'd like to say thank you to all of you supporting Into the Word financially. We could not stay on this radio station without that, so God bless you for it. Go ahead and open again to Judges chapter number 8, verse 28. Puts the length of Gideon's judgeship at 40 years. During those 40 years, it would appear that Gideon starts wishing that he'd taken the kingship that had been offered to him at the beginning of that 40 years. How do we know that? Because of the name that he gives to one of his boys. Verse 29 says, Yerub-Baal, that's his nickname that came at the very beginning of his story, the son of Joash went and lived in his own house. So he's got his own place that he governs from. Now Gideon had 70 sons. Think about that. 70 boys. That's not even counting all the girls that he's got as well. His own offspring, for he had many wives. And we can't pull any punches about this. That is a direct violation of God's covenant. God had told Moses to tell the people, when you do end up with a king, he should not be multiplying wives to himself. The multiplication of wives by leaders is a mechanism of political power. You're trying to make deals. You're trying to make alliances, bargains, and you allied yourself through marriages. And so God did not want the leadership in Israel to do that. And yet Gideon did it anyway. I think it probably came later in his leadership. At the very beginning, I think he probably behaved himself, and then he started fudging a little bit, and then pretty soon it just took on a life of its own. But finally, we get to this point, verse 31. And his concubine, which is a junior wife, a wife that doesn't have all the other privileges, it's probably someone he just hooked up with. His concubine, who was in Shechem, and that location is very important. That's the place where the standing stones were put up by Joshua at the direction of Moses and had Moses' book of Deuteronomy written on them. That is also the place where the blessing and cursing ceremony took place. Gideon's concubine lives there. And so she also bore him a son, which means he's legitimate in one sense, but illegitimate in another. His mother is not a full-fledged wife. So he is not supposed to be an heir like the other 70 guys are. So she bore him a son, and he, meaning Gideon, called his name Abimelech. Abimelech means my daddy is king. And so that tells me that Gideon rethought his choice to turn down the kingdom way back at the very beginning of his 40 years. But Gideon then dies at a good old age. I mean, he's served for 40 years, and he must have been already in his upper 30s whenever he started all of this, because his son, his oldest son, seems to be about a teenager at this time. So he dies at a pretty good old age, and ends up being buried in the tomb of Joash, his father, at Ophrah of the Abiezrites. Now, Ophrah is just a little ways to the west from Jezreel, northwest from Jezreel, just a few miles. So it's in the Jezreel Valley. Verse 33. As I said when we closed last time, you know what happens when a strong leader dies. The Israelis start going wild again. The sinfulness starts bubbling to the surface. As soon as Gideon died, the people of Israel turned again and whored after the Baalim. Now, the Baalim, that's a plural word. It's talking about the Baals, or the Baals, the chief god, as he's represented in different places around the land. Baal was the thunder and lightning god of the Canaanites who lived in this country before the Israelis. He is probably being morphed into relationship with He Who Is in some sort of twisted idea of He Who Is. But they make idols of him. And those idols become the center of worship sites. And that's why there are multiple Baalim, because of the different idols. But they have one particular place that is becoming prominent. They made Baal Berit their god. Baal Berit is a reference to the shrine that grew up around the standing stones of the book of Deuteronomy. Berit in Hebrew means covenant. Baal in Canaanite, in its most generic form, means Lord and becomes a substitute for He Who Is. So, Baal Berit is a reference to the Lord of the Covenant. But it is a twisted version of the God that the Israelis committed themselves to when they put those standing stones of Deuteronomy up at Shechem, or next to Shechem. So, Shechem has become the center of gravity for the Israeli people during this next time period because of that special site. But that special site is also being twisted into a paganized version of He Who Is. So, verse 34, the people of Israel did not remember He Who Is their God, who had delivered them from the hand of all their enemies on every side, and they did not show steadfast love to the family of Yerubbaal, that is Gideon, in return for all the good that he had done to Israel. Now, that is a precursor explanation of what's about to happen. That Gideon's family should have been respected after his death for all the good things that he had done in his earlier leadership. But that's not what happens. Chapter 9 happens. Now, Abimelech, remember him? The son of Yerubbaal, through a concubine, at Shechem. So, the young man, and I'm sure he is very young, whose name given to him by his father means my daddy is king. He went to Shechem to his mother's relatives and said to them and to the whole clan of his mother's family, say in the ears of all the leaders of Shechem, which is better for you? That all 70 of the sons of Yerubbaal rule over you, or that one rule over you? And remember also that I'm your bone and your flesh. So this young man comes to his family members on his mom's side and says, with my dad dead, which would you rather have? 70 guys that try to take over leadership in his place, or one guy that serves in that role, and that guy being your relative? Which would you think is the better idea? And of course, his relatives are going to say, well, we want you. And his idea is, now, convince your fellow Shechemites to go along with this. Verse 3, his mother's relatives spoke all these words on his behalf in the ears of all the leaders of Shechem, and their hearts inclined to follow Abimelech, for they said, well, he's our brother. And so they gave him 70 pieces of silver. Think about that. How many sons does Gideon have? 70. Those are the legitimate ones. 70 legitimate sons. So these guys give one chunk of silver for every one of Gideon's legitimate heirs. They gave him 70 pieces of silver out of the house of Baal Berit. Now that's the shrine building that I've been talking about that has been built over time around and over those 70 stones that are supposed to have the book of Deuteronomy written on them. My suspicion is that over time they have lost the covenant connection. They've kept only the traditional sacredness of the site, that somehow this is a God power site, and they've totally blown off whatever remains of the written word. The words probably faded out over time. And so these guys are religionists that are tied in with something special for the Israelis, but they have twisted it into a paganized version of itself. And they give Abimelech enough cash out of that sacred site. These are donations, understand, that have been given over time. They give him enough buying power that he can do this, with which Abimelech hired worthless and reckless fellows who followed him. So he rented a gang. He bought himself mercenary followers. And then what did he do? He went to his father's house at Ophrah. Now Shechem is down in the hill country south of the Jezreel Valley. It's about a day's travel from Shechem up to Ophrah. So Abimelech hires his thugs, hires his little mercenary army, and then goes up to where his father has recently died and where his 70 half-brothers are gathered, trying to figure out what they're going to do now that dad is dead. So he went to his father's house in Ophrah and killed, or murdered, executed his brothers, the son of Yerubbaal, 70 men on one stone. So they apparently capture them and then just start killing them one right after another, butchering them on this stone that they set up for that purpose. Maybe they're chopping their heads off. But Jotham, the youngest son of Yerubbaal, was left, for he hid himself. So apparently son number 70 got away. He is younger. Maybe he's a teenager himself. Now all the leaders of Shechem came together, all of Beth Milo, which is somewhere close to Shechem, And they went and made Abimelech king by the oak of the pillar of Shechem. Now, this oak, don't think of an oak tree. It's actually just a big tree that's there in the Middle East. This big tree is probably the one that is right next to the shrine building, the house of Berit, that is the house of the covenant, Baal Berit, the house of the Lord's covenant, the place where the standing stones of the covenant were. Remember that when Joshua made his farewell address, he set up a stone pillar, a stone marker next to the tree that was right there at that site. So this pillar mentioned here is probably that stone marker set up by Joshua several hundred years earlier. Now, what was the point of that stone marker? It was to be a reminder to the Israelites that they were committing to only worship the one and true living God, He who is. But now it's been twisted on its head. This whole religious complex here is devoted to Baal. And these guys are going to anoint Abimelech as king at this sacred site. Now, the youngest surviving son, the youngest and only surviving son of Gideon, gets wind of this coronation ceremony. Verse number 7. When it was told to Jotham, he went and stood on top of Mount Gerizim. Now, Ebal is the mountain on the north side of the little valley that goes westward out of Shechem. Mount Gerizim is on the south side. So the little shrine area of Baal Berit, the Lord of the Covenant, the place that we're talking about where this coronation ceremony is happening, that's probably at the foot of Mount Ebal on the north. So Jotham takes a stand on the south mountain, far enough away that he can escape once he says his piece, but close enough that he can yell and be heard clearly. And so he takes his stand up on Mount Gerizim, and he cries aloud and said to them, "Listen to me, you leaders of Shechem, that God may listen to you. The trees once went out to anoint a king over them, and they went to the olive tree, 'Reign over us!' But the olive tree said to them, 'Shall I leave my abundance, by which gods and men are honored, and go hold sway over the trees?'" So he tells them a fable of trees, of plants. This is an illustration to get these guys thinking. It is also prophetic, so Jotham's probably got a little help from the Holy Spirit in phrasing it this way. So he first uses plants that everybody agrees are great, and none of them want to leave their greatness to become king over the plants. Second tree. The trees said to the fig tree, "You come and reign over us." But the fig tree said to them, "Shall I leave my sweetness and my good fruit and go hold sway over the trees?" And the trees said to the vine, "You come and reign over us." But the vine said to them, "Shall I leave my wine that cheers God and men and go hold sway over the trees?" And then all the trees said to the bramble. Now, this is where it takes the dark turn, the twist. Nobody likes brambles. "You come and reign over us." And the bramble said to the trees, "If in good faith you're anointing me king over you, then come and take refuge in my shade. But if not, let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon." Now, the cedars of Lebanon are like really monster trees, rivaling kind of our redwoods, our sequoias. And so basically this bramble is full of itself, saying, yeah, if you want me to be king over you, that's fine. But if you try to go against that, then I'm going to let my fury go and I'll destroy everything, including all of the cedars of Lebanon. Verse 16, here's the application from Jotham. Now, therefore, if you have acted in good faith and integrity when you made Abimelech king, if you dealt well with Yerubbaal, Gideon, and his house, and have done good, done to him as his deeds deserved, for my father fought for you, risked his life, delivered you from the hand of Midian, and you've risen up against my father's house this day. You've killed his son, 70 men on one stone, and have made Abimelech, the son of his female servant, king over the leaders of Shechem, because he's your relative. So if you have acted in good faith and integrity, which of course they haven't, with Yerubbaal and with his house this day, then you rejoice in Abimelech. Let him also rejoice in you. But if not, let fire come out from Abimelech and devour the leaders of Shechem and Beth Milo. Let fire come out from the leaders of Shechem and from Beth Milo and devour Abimelech. So he puts a curse on them all. How dare you treat my father and his family in the way you've done, by throwing everything behind this Abimelech fellow and murdering everybody else? May you both burn each other up. That's effectively the curse that he puts on them. And then Jotham ran away. He fled. He went to Be'er. I think it's possible that Be'er was across the Jordan. There is a Be'er over there, but there are several others around, so we can't be 100% sure. But I'm sure he left the area. He doesn't want to be anywhere near where these guys hold sway, because he'd be on their hit list. And so he lived there because of Abimelech, his brother, that is his half-brother. Up to this point in the book of Judges, the cycle has been that we would have a judge that dies, and then Israel descends into sin, and then God sends oppressors from the outside because of the curse, and then the people get all upset and beg God for relief from this oppression, and then God would send them another judge. Well, this is an unusual cycle, because when Gideon the judge dies, it is one of his sons that steps up and becomes the oppressor. And the people are going to end up asking for relief from him. Thankfully, it doesn't last very long. Verse 22 says, Abimelech ruled over Israel just 3 years. That's it. 3 calendar years. God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and the leaders of Shechem. So God allows them to kind of not trust each other. Now, the leaders of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech, that the violence done to the 70 sons of Yerubbaal might come, and their blood be laid on Abimelech, their brother, who killed them, and on the men of Shechem, who strengthened his hands to kill his brothers. And so the leaders of Shechem put men in ambush against him on the mountaintops. That's going to come later in the story. And they robbed all who passed by them along that way. They were also stealing things from travelers. And that that's something that Abimelech doesn't like because that shortchanges him. He's supposed to be the king of the area, and they're taking his stuff. And so it was told to Abimelech. Now, verse 26. Gaal, the son of Ebed, moved into Shechem with his relatives, and the leaders of Shechem put confidence in him. Now, we will discover later that Gaal is not an Israeli. He is a descendant of Hamor from way back in the time of Jacob. Remember that Shechem was populated by a different people group when Shechem came, Jacob came there, and then his sons murdered a lot of the men of the city, and it caused all sorts of trouble, and Jacob had to move. Well, some of the survivors from that time period eventually come back, and they live there, and they have their own family lines. And even when Israel came into the land and started living at Shechem, some of these original non-Israeli Shechemites got back into the community. Not surprising, because we know that that has been the pattern of the Israelis during the period of the Judges. So this guy moves in and starts making arrangements or making friendships with the Israeli Shechemite leaders against Abimelech. They went out into the field, they gathered the grapes from their vineyards, they trod them, held a festival, and they went into the house of their god, that would be Baal Berit, and they ate and drank, and they reviled Abimelech. So it's basically the time of the Feast of Tabernacles, the grape harvest has come in, and the Shechemites and Gaal are hanging out together over at the shrine building of Baal Berit, and they're talking down Abimelech.